was a really fun studio we shot at. It's this very like cavernous, dark, stonery vibe.
So we just got to experiment in that room. I remember like really like running around in the room. Like, yeah. You're like get away from the microphone, then run up to the microphone like hello. Oh,
and, we also did it outside, and there were neighbors having a barbecue, and I'm just like screaming like help.
Welcome to Bitch Talk. I'm your host, Erin, here with my co-host, Ange, aka Captain Party. And over the last 10 years, we've been elevating marginalized voices through interviews and events.
Sometimes over a glass of whiskey. If you're thirsty for more bitches, head over to bitchtalkpodcast.com and follow us on Instagram.
A big thank you to 48 Hills and our listeners for voting us Best of the Bay Best Podcast in 2022 and 2023.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to our Sundance and Slam Dance coverage. Today we're highlighting Sundance horror and fantasy shorts, The Rainbow Bridge, and Dream Creep. As usual, we will be joined by our honorary festival bitch, John Wildman. Enjoy!
We are back on Bitch Talk and FilmsGoneWild.com. My name is John Wildman. I'm the editor-in-chief of Films Gone Wild. With me is Angela Tabora and Erin Lim from Bitch Talk. On this segment, we're going to talk about a Sundance midnight short. This film is The Rainbow Bridge. We have with us the director and writer, Dimitri Simakis, and we have one of the stars, Tu Tran. Wonderful to have you both here.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. We start off by having you introduce our audience to the film. They have not seen it as yet, and there's a lot to explain with this film. So, Dimitri, take it away.
Sure. So, Tu Tran here plays a woman named Tina, who's losing her beloved dog of many years. I think we all can, you know, relate to having a pet for quite some time. We're a little too attached to, and as they get older, your fear kind of starts to go up. So she finds herself at a kind of an esoteric pet clinic where they promise human to pet communication. There's, you know, a lot of kind of fake science involved. It's very mysterious, but then some chaos ensues when Tina and her dog Mimu, I should say, their bond is so strong it transcends them to like other dimensions. So there's all sorts of insanity and other realms, and what else? Exploding heads, sort of. it's not a sad piece. We try to make it more of a madcap kind of psychedelic romp.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that with you a little bit. I love the use of large puppetry. We were lucky enough to see that in one of our favorite shows, Blind Spotting Season 2. They used a large puppet.
Ooh, did they?
Yeah, so I feel like that's a new... Well, it's an old thing, but now it's new again. And also just the imagination around this whole piece. So if you can dig into that a little bit, I would love that.
No, yeah. I'm obsessed with like 80s fantasy, 70s sci-fi, even like 90s sci-fi, right? There's so much good stuff in there.
Oh yeah, yeah. Just like before like CG really took off. Like,
yeah, kind of like... that beautiful time when practical puppets kind of ruled the earth, sort of. And there wasn't even really a discussion with like doing, you know, computer animated characters or whatever. Not that I'm against it at all. There's beautiful stuff there too. But my my partner in another collective I do called Everything is Terrible, he's like an incredible puppet maker. We do all these live shows where we bring him on the road. It's this whole crazy thing. It's a, you know, I could get into it, but he was the first person I went out to and was like, Nick, you got it. Can you build me a 6-foot puppet? But usually how things work is that it just like... He just keeps getting bigger and bigger of like, well, the head, I didn't want it to feel too small in any way. And our DP that day was extremely upset with us. She's a real pro, Shawnee Bryan. Shout out to Shawnee. But she was just like, you can't expect me to actually shoot this, can you? Like, I don't even know if we have a green screen that goes that high. And we figured it out. And you hugging it was such a wonderful thing.
Yeah, a really huggable puppet for sure.
You can't fake that, you know? That real fur, it's nothing compares.
Yeah. So, no, yeah. I'll take a hug. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I loved the doctor's office and the decor. There's really beautiful pieces that I would love to have in my room. So can you talk about the set design and also the use of props on your end too with Mimu, et cetera?
Yeah.
I mean, the props really are a character. in the film.
I had Mimu, you know, I practice animism all the time, you know, so we're holding Mimu. It was very like, to me, it was a lot, very alive already, you know, so.
This was the real world Mimu, which was just a puppet we got off Etsy. So
little white stuffed Poochie. Then we're talking about the big Mimu, the fantasy Mimu. It's really, you know, it's fun to interact with puppets, you know. So they're just another living soul, just like all of us, you know. So
well, here's the thing, it's not you're acting with puppets, you're acting with green screen, you're acting with stuff that's you know, goo and things like that, and things like, and as an actor, you're already dealing with lines and character and character that you're trying to create, you know, with Dimitri's help and everything. But when you have all these other technical hurdles that are going on, talk about that. Talk about how you focused. Talk about how, you know, and still were able to deliver what you needed to deliver with all of that.
I don't know. You just do it, you know? You kind of like have a, you know, all these things that you kind of have to keep track of having to do, you know, but you just, I don't know, you just do it. There's not too much thinking involved.
And Dimitri, from a director's perspective, you know the shots you need to get. You know, you're crossing things off the list with your AD, like going, are you going to make the day?
Sure.
And you also have shit that can go wrong with prosthetics, with puppets, with goop. You know, there are these things that can really just fuck up, you know, the next shot and slow you down.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it kind of connects with what you were saying, which is the biggest thing, I think, for at least me and then the production design, like the art department, was immersion. It was like world building and it had to be real. It was about a year ago when I was doing pre-production for it, and we were buried in snow. So I moved to Idlewild, California, which is about 2 hours east of LA. It's a mountain town. There's a dog mayor. That's what we're most famous for. It's a whole thing. Yeah, don't get into the politics up there about it. But anyway, so we were buried in snow literally for about 2 weeks, and I was just like, okay, I'm going to just create as many detailed posters, forms, QWQ, whatever, quantum wellness questionnaires. Again, it's kind of this new age esoteric clinic, if that helps explain it. But depth was really important to like keep it real. And because of, I think, all that, I don't know, did anything, I don't remember much going, aside from the puppet problems that with height, it was pretty well-oiled machine because of the team we had.
Yeah.
We had a very insanely professional team. Like, everybody, a lot of them are filmmakers on their own, writer, directors, builders. Like, there's so much talent in this team, many of whom we knew, but a lot of whom we didn't. Two didn't know a lot. She came, 2 days before? And we threw you into it. But meticulous planning really, really helped. It was like, you know, both two and I... she more than I, but have a background in illustration, like light animation. You do more animation, but light animation.
Yeah, yeah. Just like very crude animation, but yeah.
It just felt like storyboarding and all that just felt like a living comic book in that way. So it was just like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Oh, can I use software to just like, now they have like 3D software that's so easy to use where you can just like figure out your angles and put little squares for where the table is and all that. And it's like, and just everyone involved, our AD, the DP and her team, it was insane. Like it was a 4.5 day shoot, which is, I know how insane that is for a short film. Yeah. We were very lucky to have all that time, but with all that time, we got into the psychosis, I think.
It is remarkable how so far removed it is for those of us who aren't artists making films that do that did the stick figures and sure. stuff like that. That's where
we've done plenty of that too in a rush. But.
Again, there is so much going on in this in such a crazy, wonderful way. The film is The Rainbow Bridge. We've been talking with Demetrios Simakis, the director and writer, Tutron, who stars in it. The film is screening the Midnight Section at Sundance. It's been great talking to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. And again, sorry for my demon voice.
It's a sexy,
I don't know how it sounds on the other side, but here it just sounds like...
Oh, it sounds great.
You got like a Lee Marvin thing working for you.
This episode is brought to you by Fancy Bitch Richard Horn,
a.k.a. The Curse and Ricardo Falls. Bitch Talk would like to give an extra special thanks to our caviar bitches, Antoinette Tabora, Annie Tabora, Courtney Kita, a.k.a. C-Note, Tim Sika, Sign the Show, and Arabella DeLuco, founder of WeXL.org.
Here we are for another segment of Bitch Talk and FilmsGoneWild.com. My name is John Wildman. I'm the editor-in-chief of FilmsGoneWild.com. And with me is Angela Tabora and Aaron Lim. They are the Bitch Talk chicks. And on this segment, we are going to talk about the Sundance midnight short, Dream Creep. We have with us the director-writer, Carlos A.F. Lopez, and one of the stars of this film, Sydney Jane Hunt. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
All right, we always start the segment by having our filmmaker introduce our audience to the film. They haven't seen it as yet. So, Carlos, right. Tell us about Dream Creep.
Dream Creep. So, Dream Creep is about a couple who wake up one night to strange sounds emanating from an orifice. which is kind of how we leave it. I like that because people run wild with their imagination of what it is. So, and they're kind of thrown into this supernatural emergency that... We ride along in an intense 12 minutes and 34 seconds and try and find out if it can all work out for everybody.
It is very intense. It is a very wonderful short. So good. I wanted to know, the majority of the film takes place in one room, I would say. So is that more of a challenge as a filmmaker, or is it like, it's budgetary and it works out for us better?
It was obviously there's a element, because I've been, you know, making films for like 20 years where it's like you kind of always list your assets. What do I have to work with? So like, you know, we had just moved into this house. I had kind of a big bedroom. I'm like, oh, we can like fit lights in here and be up high and all this stuff. So it was like, okay, I know I can shoot there. And so that kind of made it, yeah, that was kind of what helped inform like the idea of like we could stay in this bedroom and then how intense that would be to like just only be in here the whole time. And so, yeah, it was kind of just for that reason. But it, you know, obviously it works for the story of like, you know, what's going on in real life for these people. But yeah, it was like a good way to kind of have it known that we could make this happen, you know, and just have to write it and kind of, you know, plan it out and plot it out and make sure it's tight. So.
When you're casting for a film like this, that's just two characters, one of them has to carry most of it with extreme close-ups of his face, the other one is very vocally involved. How do you plan that? How do you decide who the right person is for this job? And then we can cut to Sydney after that.
Well, I've known Sydney for a few years, and I've kind of seen, just knowing the work she's done, I knew that she would be great. I know she has a great like vocal delivery and performance, and she can, you know, have different like attitudes and all this like variety of stuff. So like, I was like, I should know she could pull off, and it would be cool to hear her, you know, like, so I knew that she could do that. And Ian is an actor that we know as well. And we just know he has like vulnerability. He's like, for us, he's like our little sweetheart, you know? So we're like, oh, it'd be so like heartbreaking to put him in this role. Because he would just be like, we could just feel that, you know, he would be very vulnerable and kind of what we want, you know, we wanted that thing where like someone, when you wake up, my whole thing with Dream Creep is like waking up in the middle of the night and just being like the most unprepared for anything. So especially if you're thrown with some crazy situation like that. So I could in writing it, and like after we had it for a while, I could really hear their voices in it. So it was kind of easy, just because we've known each other. It's like great making movies with friends. So I was like, finally, we get to like do something like really juicy with these two people. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, we did it in his house. It felt like a house party, like with your closest friends who are all just like
sick
working.
Parties.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're sick.
Yes. But I mean. Shooting in bed, that was a great, it was, I mean, like, I feel I did a lot of the work up front with the voice stuff, and then I got to lay in bed for a whole day.
Yeah.
And,
that was helpful, because we, like, and so, a big, like, Sydney and Ian were kind of from Seattle, but then they moved, so, you know, again, me being too practical, I was like, well, they're gone, so I guess we have to find someone else, but we were in South by, because Sydney came out and did a short episodic I produced for Calvin Lee Reader. So we were in South By, and Ian was there with another film. He was in a feature called This Closeness. And we're just hanging out at a party because we're friends. And Megan Leonard, our producer, and I were at a party. And we're just looking at them. We're like, "Oh my god! Like, why are we thinking about anyone else? They're like, they're right there." So then it just made sense. And then yeah, I just made it a big family affair. It was just like Sid said, it was just a big party at our house. And yeah. I was directing in my house shoes, you know.
This is where I do the disclaimer that I've been working to help promote this film. And,
conflict of interest.
But because of that, I can bring a little a question with a little inside baseball here. And Carlos, give you an opportunity to talk about this. Because in our discussions, you know, when we have to like build synopses and stories, you know, I said, well, as a publicist, you know, I wanted to specify that, you know, that it's a character's, you know, either girlfriend or wife or what have you. And it was a major point with you and Megan, the conversation with the producers. You go, no, we really do not want to do that. We really want to make sure that we're not being ID specific on the partner. Mm-hmm. And it was a fascinating conversation, and I would really love for you to talk about it right now.
All right. Well, it's weird because it's, you know, and I think for me, I have this objective way of writing sometimes where I just want it to be, I want to be in control of like what people are going to glean from what's written about a thing. So, and then especially with, even when I'm writing this, I was like, do I make them husband and wife? Do I make them, but then I was like, I don't think anyone needs that. I think we're going to know that they're a couple in whatever way, you know, you might want to say, maybe they're just business partners. I don't know. Yeah, so that's kind of just like a personal thing for writing. I think I use that kind of terminology. And then at the same time, yeah, even when writing it, I was thinking like, is it important to make them more than boyfriend and girlfriend, you know, and stuff like that. But you know, in just trying to refine everything to its like purest form, I just was like, just keep everything as simple as possible. Don't try and infer too much and kind of leaving it a little bit more free to have people interpret whatever they want from it.
All right. And then the other thing that, you know, I was telling you and the producers yesterday that my conversations with other press members, when you're talking about a horror project, when you're talking about a genre project, you know, actually, any other normal project, the first question is, who's in it? Mm-hmm. When it's a horror genre project, the very first question is it actually scary? And you know, and in this one, I've been able to tell people, oh, this is legit. This is legit. Mm-hmm. But I would love for you to talk about building dread properly, because something may or may not happen with the meat thermometer in this film, right?
Right.
It may or may not happen, and you know, but building the dread and the threat of what might happen is very specific and very key.
Yeah,
talk about that.
I feel like that. I really respond to movies because of the element of time that they occur in, and so especially with a short, because there's this kind of way of not knowing. When you go see a shorts package, you don't know if you're in for like a 3-minute movie or like a 20-minute movie. Mm. So it's just like being able to mess with people in that state of like being unaware. And so so building moments is kind of important, where it's kind of like, I know we can build this moment and people can anticipate and like expect things. But then for a short, we can end it abruptly and subvert all their expectations and all that stuff. So sorry, the altitude.
I thought you were just really passionate.
Yeah, I'm like,
whoa,
what's happening?
It's like passionate, and I'm like, how high are we? No, but yeah, I feel like that's always a thing I'm almost working towards in my movies, is trying to build a moment. And so yeah, it has a lot to do with like sound design as well. And so this movie obviously features heavily on sound design. Because I'll give a little spoiler. I mean, it's not too much. The thing about this movie, the way I wrote it, it's like I want to be able to. It's like a magic trick. I want to be able to tell you like how this magic trick's gonna be done, and still be able to like impress you somehow. You know, like so it's like the, you know, her dreams sounds are leaking out of her ears. So the whole thing for me is the idea of your the sounds of your dreams. You know, like that you don't really think of them in that way. Like and when you look at someone and you can, you know, if you know they're dreaming, it's crazy to think that there's like a whole world going on that you don't know what's happening, you know, but so if you got a little insight into that. So playing with sound is, for me, it's like, that's how you can really build the dread kind of subliminally. You know, you can use like low tones and things that you aren't noticing, and that's how it can all kind of creep up. But yeah, it was, in the editing process with our editor Duncan, he gave a pass, and there's like a crucial moment in the middle of the movie, and he just got that moment so perfect that was just like, I don't think we really touched it that much. Maybe we shaved off like a frame or two just to make everything else fit. But it was like that moment happened, and we're like, all right, we have that moment. So now we know that we can earn that somehow, and then, you know, we can have this relief, and but then also kind of bring it back. And, you know, so it was like being able to play with the timing of it. That was, yeah, that was like the finesse that had to happen. So.
Yes. Okay, breathe. Have some water. No, but Sydney, when it comes to voice acting, how do you reach that place? Because I was so frightened by your voice, not even just the screaming, which was excellent, but just your franticness. How do you reach that place when you're just standing in front of a mic?
It was a really fun studio we shot at. Aaron Schroeder, who did the sound.
Yeah, Pierce Day Recordings, shout out.
It was this very like cavernous, dark kind of like stonery vibe of a studio. And I realized like I had never been in a situation where I was allowed to like go so hog wild with like, what are the limits of my voice? And that was so much fun. We did so many different takes and just went crazy.
Yeah, that was a big benefit. Like Aaron's a great friend of mine, and he runs this music studio, and he's been wanting to do movies. So this was like, I was like, this is the perfect project for us to get together on. So Sid came up to Seattle like a week before we shot. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get in the studio and record all of her voice stuff beforehand. So then we were to play, that was our playback while we shot. So yeah, we got to just, and because it was so casual and, you know, we weren't on the clock because he was very generous with his time letting us record in there. So we just got to experiment in that room. I remember like, really, you were like running around in the room. Like, yeah. You were like, get away from the microphone, then run up to the microphone like, hello? Oh,
so, we also did it outside and there were neighbors having a barbecue and I'm just like screaming like, help!
Yeah, just running around. Like put a microphone in a tree and have to like find it in the bushes. Yeah. So a lot of stuff we didn't use, but it was just like that freeness of being able. And I love, I love. She was able to just, you know, we would do a take. I'm like, all right, let's do it this way, and she would just like get right into there. And so it was really fun to kind of have that going into shooting the movie that we like knew. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, I know this is gonna work with her voice, you know. And like, and because Ian just has to like look at her. So it was great for him to have that. To be able to react to, because that was like the thing when we were shooting the movie, because, you know, we're like, how are we going to make it work when we're showing her face and we're hearing her voice? Like, how is he, you know, would it be just one of us reading the lines? I'm like, yeah, but that wouldn't be as like get him to get in that space. So,
well, no, it was good. And also to give a shout out, the on-camera performance is Evil Dead worthy. So, so congratulations on that.
Well, okay. That was the other part. I knew she had the voice part, but she also has our friend Lael Rogers made a movie with Sid where she's like dancing in this like crazy way, and that was like a big influence. I know Sid can do that too, and like that'll be cool to like have that part of it happen.
Well, again, the film is Dream Creep, playing in the midnight short section at Sundance. We've been talking with Carlos A.F. Lopez, the writer director, and Sydney Jane Hunt, one of the stars of the film. It's been great talking to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. You can find more information about this episode in our show notes.
If you're missing us, you can visit us at bitchtalkpodcast.com to sign up for our newsletter and buy us a cup of coffee.
Did you know we're also on the radio? You can find us at bff.fm.
And lastly, rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. All the cool bitches are doing it.
This podcast is a proud member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.